Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Darius Johnson, 15 years of combination experience, currently a firefighter on Ladder 1 for Jacksonville Fire Rescue. But before finding his way to the Sunshine State, Darius started out as a firefighter for Columbia Richland Fire Services, where he rose to the rank of captain before packing up and moving down south. From a very early age, Darius always wanted to be a firefighter. Luckily, he was able to find a mentor that guided him and told him all he needed to know about the fire service beyond just running calls and training. Darius dropped many gems and nuggets that I hope the listeners are able to catch on to and apply within their own lives. With that, I present Darius Johnson.
All right. Well, my name's Darius Johnson. Most people know me as DJ. Been in the fire service for a little over 15 years, currently with Jacksonville Fire Rescue in Jacksonville, Florida. Man, I've been here a little over 3 years now, kind of bounced around a little bit, but happy as heck to be in this department. Been at Ladder 1 the whole time, basically fresh out of recruit school, jumped right to Ladder 1 and been there the whole time. Was on one shift, bounced to another shift, but got my start in the fire service, man. It's funny. It's kind of cliche. I was that little kid that said he wanted to be a fireman and actually meant it. I never really grew out of that thing, man. Quick little story. I grew up in the inner city of Cleveland, Ohio. So I was living in, you can kind of say, that district that we all want to work in, meaning that inner city, that ghetto, it burns. It's always stuff hopping. So as a kid, I would always see fire trucks going by all the time. And that stuff just kind of piqued my interest. I don't have any firefighters in my family. I'm first generation. The closest thing I had was, you know, a couple cops. You know, my uncle was a police officer for the city of Cleveland. He retired out as a commander of the SWAT team. So, like, wow, that was pretty cool. Okay. A couple of other uncles that were like motormen, worked for the police department. But as far as the fire service, there was no one. My neighbor across the street, I believe it was her grandson or nephew, he was a fireman. So every once in a blue moon, I'd see the rig pull up to her house and I go run into the blinds and kind of look out like, man, that thing is so cool. I want to know more about it. And graciously enough, my mom was able to take my brother and I to the local firehouse, Station 31. I still have that picture to this day of me and my brother. I'm like 4 or 5 years old. We're sitting in front of Engine 31, Ladder 31 in the 6th Battalion in the Glenville District. And I'm sorry, the Collinwood District. I'm just like grinning ear to ear. I'm holding the helmet, wearing the guy's coat, bro. And I was hooked. I was freaking hooked from that moment. And of course, the movie Backdraft. If you grew up in the 90s, you had that thing on VHS, on loop. I don't know how many times I would beg my grandmother during the summers, hey, can I watch it? Throwing it in the VCR and just me and my brother reenacting the scenes out, man. And I was a buff. Like, I just wanted to know so much about the fire service. And again, living in the inner city, you know, that's kind of the busier area. So you would see it all the time. And I was hooked. I was never shied away from it. I was never really taken aback or, you know, feared of it. I just absolutely loved it. And that's really how I just got into the fire service. It's just that little 4 or 5 year old kid, like, say, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, I want to be a fireman. And that just stuck with me from the career days, and they bring the trucks to the school. I'm sitting front row of the class. It got to the point where they're telling me to be quiet because I remember the stuff they said last year. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a flash hood. You know, that's your box line. Okay, well, what about the other kids? They don't know. So yeah, man, it's awesome. So yeah, that's really what piqued my interest and got me into the fire service for sure.
Okay. All right. So, like, how did you officially get yourself through those doors?
Ooh. Well, I guess I'll try and keep it short. I don't want to bore you all day.
No, it's fine.
When I was 13, we moved down to South Florida. My parents got a different career opportunity, so they got us out of the inner city. We moved to Broward County, Florida, which is, you know, the county just north of Miami-Dade. It's where Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, Pompano, you know, all those places are. So we're living in this little small, I call it small town, called Plantation.
Okay.
If you've ever been to South Florida, you drive 5 minutes, you're in another city. You drive five more minutes, you're in another city. So I was living in Plantation, Florida. It's like 21 square miles, about 100,000 people living in it, just outside of Fort Lauderdale. And, you know, like I said, I always wanted to be a fireman. You know, no matter how much people would, you know, joke around or make fun of me when we would write papers in middle school and high school, I'm like, no, this is what I want to do. And it just so happened, out of all the cities in Broward County, you know, they're all paid career departments. The city of Plantation was a combination department, meaning the EMS side was 100% paid and the fire side was combination. You know, the chiefs and admin were paid, but the firemen 100% volunteer. And it's like, yeah, you can join right out of high school. We'll put you through what we call it your minimum standards, your firefighter one, your firefighter two. And yeah, you can be riding trucks, and as soon as 3 months, I'm like, sign me up. What's the stipulations? Like, well, high school diploma, and you have to live in the city. Check, check. I had some little grandeur about, you know, going to college and possibly running track and all this stuff. Like, I wasn't great. I wasn't bad either. You know, I was middle of the road, but I'm also in Florida with these Tyreek Hills of the world. I'm like, yeah, this ain't gonna be it for me. I gotta figure something out. You know, and my grades were good. You know, I had the Bright Future scholarship and all that. I could have gone to college, but I pride my parents in allowing me to make the decision for myself. And they didn't force me to go to college. They knew I had the grades to go pretty much anywhere I wanted to or do what I want. I said, Mom, Dad, I still haven't grown out of it. Like, I know I've been saying it for years. This is what I really want to do. And I joined the Explorers program my senior year of high school. Joined the Explorers with the city of Sunrise just so I could make sure, like, all right, let me peel the curtain back. Hey, what's the job really like? And I got to give a shout out. I think it's battalion chief now, Jeff Martin for the city of Sunrise. He was, you know, one of our lead instructors. He was a lieutenant at the time. And man, he would keep everything 100 with me, kept it a buck. I'm like, hey, this is how the job is. This is what the schedule's like, you know, and even so much like, hey, this is what retirement is. Hey, this is what it means when they say that this is a drop plan. This is how you do a deferred. Like, just telling me the ins and outs of, like, yeah, this is a fun job, but this is how you make it a career to support a family. So I took all that, went back home, said, hey, Mom, Dad, look, this is how I can make a living, and this is how I can support a family one day. And they were all on board. So I had the game plan laid out, graduated high school, jumped right into EMT school. Signed up with Plantation, started with them in October of 2009. Yeah. And that's how I got my foot in the door, starting to figure out, you know, how does the fire service work? What all do I need to get onto a career department? And in Florida in general, for the most part, during that time, you had to have your minimum standards, firefighter one and firefighter two, and EMT at a minimum. Okay. But let's be real. You had to be a medic if you wanted to get your foot in the door. If you weren't a legacy, you didn't know anyone, you had to be a firefighter medic with some sort of track list of, you know, qualifications and things like that. So I got my EMT, got my medic, got all my fire stuff through Plantation while also getting the experience to go on calls and go to fires with the Plantation Volunteer Fire Department. Even so much as, for what it's worth, promoting up through their volunteer ranks to the rank of lieutenant. Granted, I was like 21 years old, 20 years old. Like, I don't know. Like, looking back at it, I'm like, oh, they really did trust me a lot. You know? Yeah, just I was into the job. But there was something missing. You know, I wasn't originally from South Florida. Like I said, I was from Cleveland. So my idea of what the fire service was is everything that I saw in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. You know, the fire department was separate from EMS. Here in South Florida, it's EMS based, it's fire rescue. You know, your firefighters are also riding on ambulances. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. But as an 18, 19-year-old kid, I'm like, nah, man, I want to ride the engine. I want to ride the truck. Like, I want to ride the heavy rescue. Like, well, we don't have those. I'm like, what do you mean you don't have a heavy rescue? Like, it's fire department, right? So it's just like I was kind of taken aback. I was like, man, doing ride-alongs or EMT and paramedic school, you know, just getting your crap just, like, beat out of you, getting drilled. I'm like, man, I don't even really, not to say because the EMS is important, but I was like, man, I really don't care about this kind of stuff. Like, I just want to be a fireman. Like, I just want to fight fire. Like, I'm doing this so I can get onto the job. Older, wiser me now knows clearly I work for Jacksonville Fire Rescue now. Like, yes, you can be a jack of both trades. You know, you can try to be a good paramedic while also being a jam up fireman. Like, it's okay to hang your hat on both in most instances. My life took a hard 90 after I got my paramedic, got my fire stuff. I decided I was going to say, bump this. I'm going to Columbia, South Carolina.
Out of the blue.
Out of the blue, bro. I'm sitting in the ER. I was working as a tech at one of the local hospitals as a paramedic, working the night shift, 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And I'm doing what every tech does, is working from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., in the triage, when it's dead, I'm on Facebook, bored out of my mind, scrolling. And one of my good friends from high school, who happened to be a volley with me, he had just moved to South Carolina to go take care of his dad, who was getting sick. And he was living in the Columbia metro area. And he texted me. He was like, hey, y'all should come up and visit, man. Like, it's pretty dope up here. Like, this fire department up here, they're like jam up. They're squared away. I'm like, all right, man, I don't know much about South Carolina. I'll come up and see you. But that's about it. And I don't know if this is when our phones started listening to our conversations. You know, I put my tinfoil hat on. But I kid you not, I'm scrolling and I see a job posting for Columbia, South Carolina. Right. And I'm like, let me see what they're talking about. They're like, yeah, separate from EMS, true engines, true trucks, true heavy rescues. You know, we got 32 firehouses, 30 engines, 5 trucks, 5 heavy rescues. YouTube videos. So I'm going down the rabbit hole, and bro, squirrel tails up, I am hooked. I'm like, you know what, let's go check it out, bro. I applied, myself and another one of my buddies, we applied, and yeah, got the job. Just like, all right, here I go, let me go talk to my parents, let them know, hey, I'm chasing this dream, this is what I want to do at 22 years old, packing everything up, you know, and like, let me go start fresh somewhere else and give it a shot. Best decision I ever made, bro. Best decision I ever made. Because it allowed me to like grow into a man. I had no backup plan. Like, hey, this shit's gotta work. You know, I got a lease on this apartment. You know, I can't fail out of this recruit school. Mm-hmm. And one of those recruit schools, like, hey, if you don't pass this, you're fired. No, it was, hey, you don't pass this, you're out. Like, we started with 40. I think we graduated like 32. So, yeah. Like, and it was a quick 8-week recruit class. Like, hey, this is our first time doing this accelerated thing because you guys, quote unquote, have experience. Mm-hmm. We're short staffed on 2 classes. First one's going to be 8 weeks, the next one's 16 weeks. If you fail out the 8 weeks, you can't roll into that 16-week one because that one's booked too. So this don't work. So you talk about pressure, man, and like having to grow up real quick and be like, oh yeah, this shit's serious. Like, mom and dad, they ain't here. I'm getting up at 4 a.m. making sure I'm the first one there, last one to leave, trying to, you know, build that rapport, get that reputation. Cause like, we both know it's hard to get a good one,
right?
But it's easy to get a bad one,
right?
And back then, bro, I was a 150 pounds at the most, so I was a little guy, you know. I'm like, how can I stand out, you know? So I had to use my intelligence, man, like having to be a student of the game. Like, I gotta take the extra step, like, okay, we gotta go throw 35s all day. I'm not 6'6", 250.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get this 35 up somehow, and I'm going to do it multiple times until I get it right where it's efficient and pro fishing. And man, that's where I grew up. And I love Columbia to death. That was the best 8+ years of my life. You know, almost a decade of my life was spent with that fire department. Met my wife, had a kid, you know, literally bought my first house, all that stuff. So like, I have a special place in my heart for Columbia, no doubt.
Okay. So what was your first assignment when you, obviously you graduated the 8-week recruit school. So what was your first assignment?
Oh man. So out of recruit school, I was gracious enough to go to Engine Company No. 6 on Broad River Road. At the time, it was the second busiest engine company in the department, and of course, second busiest in the state. And when I say busy, let me paraphrase it. They weren't running 5,000, 4,000 calls a year. Now, it's separate from EMS. They're strictly running fire runs, car accidents, cardiac arrest, shootings, stabbings, chest pains. That's it. We're not doing lift assist. They weren't doing lift assist topes. I apologize for saying we, because like I said, that plays in my heart, you know what
right,
I mean? But,
right.
You know, we weren't doing that, you know? So when the buzzer went off, it was usually for something halfway decent or, you know, it's some sort of medical emergency. So I went to Engine 6, Broad River Road. It was an engine in chief house, Engine 6 and Battalion 2. Got assigned there. Man, it was awesome. I remember wanting my first fire so badly and just wanting to be able to prove myself. You know, I didn't want anyone's stuff to get burnt up, nothing like that. But, you know, like, this is why we do the job.
Right.
You know,
right.
I want to be able to prove myself. I want to show these guys, like, hey, like, you guys made the right choice for requesting me to come here. Like, this is what you're going to have for the next couple of years. And it happened. And it was awesome. Engine 6, if you don't know, it's right off of I-20 and Broad River Road, but it's where I-20, I-26, and I-126 all meet. So you talk about wrecks and extrications, we had them. We had two rivers going through the district. You know, you had the Broad River, you had the Saluda River on the other side, and then we butted up right where Irmo Fire District. So we would be running mutual aid to Irma all the time. They'd be running auto aid with us, bringing their truck company over. And my first due fire on Engine 6 was the graduation night for that second class, the class that came after mine.
Okay.
So you know, we had some third due fire, second due fires, mutual aid fires. I hadn't had that first due fire on the knob, man. I'm like, come on, it's got to come. Like, we're busy enough. Population density is crazy over here, and like, we're on a little island. Like, we catch something, we buy ourselves for a hot minute. And fire came out, it was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was myself, a classmate of mine, Chris Corley, who had got detailed in for the day. Corey Hamilton was driving, aka Shaggy, love you, brother. And newly promoted Captain Ryan Gates, where he's a freaking chief now, like way off, man, doing his own thing. So that was the crew, right? Okay. Run comes out. The normal assignment probably would have been Engine 6, Engine 16, Irmo Engine 171, Ladder 7, Irmo Ladder, you know, the rescue and two battalions. But because of the graduation, they kind of pulled some units to go down there and show face. So we were in kind of a pocket.
Okay.
So when fire came out, I want to say the first due ladder was ladder 14 coming from Dentsville, which is like 13 minutes away. The second due engine was Irmo Engine 172, which was their second engine down by Lake Murray. So they were about 9-10 minutes away. So we get to this first due apartment fire on the far end of our district, like north side of, far out from the city, and it's burning, bro. It's good. It's a fire on the first and second floor, rolling up the back, getting into the attic, about to run the common attic, and boom, we lay out, first on scene report, jump off, I pull it across, Lake Corley grabs a 2.5, takes it to the rear, we get our own positive water supply, and we are just working. And I remember getting to the door, and masking up, looking at my boss, check the pattern, and I can just like, I can hear the crackling. I can still see like the siding falling off the side, and I can still smell it. You know, your heart's beating, and it's like, all right, let's go. And he's right behind me, and I remember knocking down a little bit of fire on the first floor. Once that was clear, found the stairs, and up we went, man. And it was, man, I was like, I remember taking a moment, like, yeah, this is why I made the move,
Right.
you know. And you know, once the fire was out, relief companies come in, they do the mop up, and the assistant deputy, what was it, deputy assistant chief, comes up to us. I think he was the ops chief at the time. Comes up to myself and Chris Corley. We're at the back of the engine taking a blow, getting ready to gear back up. And he said, "Gentlemen, that's how you stop an effing fire. Good job." And you know, we're talking 12, 13 years ago, man. And like, I can still remember that, like that, how much confidence that instilled in me, man. And I knew I made the right choice. I knew I was doing the right things, but I also wanted to make sure I didn't let that go to my head. And like, okay, be humble, understand that, you know, there's still a lot more work to do to be a good fireman, but this is only just a drop in the bucket. It's like, okay. And it was good for myself to know that, all right, under pressure, under these extreme circumstances, you know, I know within my heart of hearts, I have what it takes to get the job done. Because you just don't know until you're put in that situation. Like Mike Tyson said, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. So I got punched in the mouth, and I was able to bounce back and recover. And you know, I've held on to that my whole career, and I try to instill that confidence in these young guys I come across, no doubt, no doubt.
I love it, man. Love it. I love the way you know, it's funny how when it's something you truly love and you're passionate about, no matter how long it's been, you always remember that first fire, who was there, time of day, what it was like. So I love it. Love the story, man.
Oh yeah.
But you know, 9, 10 years, it's a lot. So I'm gonna fast forward a little bit, but then I'll kind of come back to a couple
Absolutely.
other things. But what made you move back to Florida?
Ah, man, yeah. A couple of things, but we'll be quick with it. The main thing was family.
Gotcha.
It was definitely family, bro. Had a COVID baby, you know what I mean? Me and the wife. She got pregnant. She told me around Father's Day of 2020. It was June of 2020. I remember I was doing laundry, and I'm opening up the dryer. She's like, "Oh, I left something in the dryer. Can you go get it?" So I open it up, and it's a onesie with the shoes and everything. So I'm like, "Oh, hey, yo, you know what I mean?" Like, oh. So yeah, found out we were having a little boy, and everything was crazy. You know, it's COVID, so you know, everyone's isolated. You know, we're celebrating, we're putting everything on social media, but you know, not having that circle, you know, it kind of sucks. You know, for me, you know, I'm just like, yeah, but I know, like, for my wife, you know, you want that rah-rah, that circle to celebrate. Like, this is a big deal. So he was born early 2021, February. Still in that little COVID period, and I'm on leave, you know, did my little leave. At the time, I was captain of Tower Ladder 9 in Colombia. So I'm on leave, making sure, texting the guys, making sure they're all good. And my parents come up, her parents come up, they see the baby, and then everyone leaves, right? They got to go back to their lives. And here we are, living in South Carolina, and we kind of had that moment of realization, like, it's us. It's just us. You know, like, granted, we have our friends that I still call family to this day, but that blood, you know, the grandparents, you know, the aunties, the uncles, my brother, who I'm super close with, you know what I mean? Like, my grandfather, who I'm super close with, who's my son's great grandfather. You know, thank God he's still around. I wanted them, me and my wife, we wanted our families to be in our sons' lives at a bigger capacity than what we were at right then and there. She mentioned that. I wholeheartedly agreed. And I said, you know what? At the time, I was like, I'm at an age where I think I can physically still do the job at a high level. if I have to start over somewhere, where do you want to go? And obviously Florida, because that's where our families were. She is from Orlando originally. I met her on a vacation through a mutual friend, and we kind of did the long distance thing, not to bore you, but then she moved up, yada yada yada. So boom, married life. So her family is in Central Florida, my family's in South Florida. So okay, let's find a good spot. But she was like adamant she did not want to go to South Florida, which I get it. You know, South Florida is a crazy animal of itself. So we settled in a couple of places, looked at a couple of different departments, you know, from Tampa, Orlando to Jacksonville, all in that general area. And I gave myself a 5-year window. I told her, I was like, all right, listen, we're gonna do this. I'm gonna get in shape. You know, granted, I wasn't already in shape. I gotta get back to like recruit school mindset. You know, maybe I can shave about 5 or 6 pounds here, lean it up, boom, boom. I know I gotta go do a CPAT. I gotta go do this the fire team test, written test, all that stuff. I'm gonna get all that squared away. This was like June of 2021. Like, I'm gonna knock all this out, boom, I did. And I'm gonna start applying after the 4th of July because we were having family come up again. And just it reassured me that this is what we were doing. We're making the right decision, seeing all our family with us together. And once they left, like, all right, yeah, let's do this. You know, it's gonna be tough to leave this department that in this city that kind of molded me into a man and, you know, leave all those friendships and relationships behind. But I got this at the time, this 5-month-old kind of just staring at me. I'm like, you know, the world is his, you know, and it's up to me to provide it for him. And if I had stayed, I knew I was doing something selfish. I was doing it for me. If I leave, I was doing it for we, all of us. I know it provide me a little bit better career opportunities, you know, financially and things like that. But I know I could get him closer, have that community, that network, because it takes a village. So I knew that that would be the right thing to do. So I applied for Jacksonville like July 17th. And I started recruit school October 25th, bro. Like it happened that freaking fast, where I told my wife we got a 3 to 5 year window. It was like 3 to 5 months, where it was just, all right, cool, crap, we got to sell the house, we got to do this, we got to do that. So it was a stressful time, but the thing that kept us going was like, hey, we're doing this for the right reason. And by the grace of God, like I said, got on with Jax. We got a house eventually. We're in the best school district in the state. He is in daycare. He has friends now. He has friends that are on the job, like their dads are on the job. My brother, golly, Pablo Jenner, I love him to death. We met somehow, our paths crossed, and his son is the same age as my son. And now our boys are just tight, just as tight as me and him are. Just saw him on the run yesterday. We're on the same shift, both downtown ladder companies, so we run into each other quite often. But it's just like, yeah, this is dope. This is where it was supposed to materialize. There were moments, you know, in that early stage, it was like, damn, did I mess up? Did I make the wrong decision? But you know, it's all shaping out how it's supposed to, man. And I'm just over the moon with the decision that me and my wife were able to come together and make, and it's working out for us for sure.
Yeah, I mean, leaving Columbia as a captain, going back to Jacksonville, starting out as a firefighter, it's not always easy, but you hear a lot of different people make that move. But as long as you know, you, the individual, you, Darius, know why you made the move and you did it for family, there should be no question. You know, a lot of people would be like, man, I can't believe you would leave being a captain and having to go and start over as a firefighter. Like, but you don't understand. Sometimes there are things in people's lives that they feel like they're missing, and it's like, hey, I need to do this. And so it's awesome, man. It's awesome. So
Absolutely.
with Jacksonville, I'm assuming you had to do another recruit class. Is it was it was it accelerated or no?
They don't do anything accelerated, man. So
Okay.
pretty much every department in Florida is set up like this. Before you can apply, you got to have your EMT and what's called your minimum standards. So you have to pay for yourself to go to a fire academy. get all your fire department certification, your minimum standards worth of training, 3 months, and then go to EMT school. Once you have that package, then you can submit an application to a department. That's about how 90 to 99% of the departments work around here. Once you get hired on and say, all right, you're good. Now it's time for you to learn how we do it here in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And that process was, man, let's see, I started October 25th and my first day on the floor was January 1st, New Year's Day. So a little over 2 months. So about 10 weeks, I think it was 9 or 10 weeks of school, you know, pretty much Monday through Friday, crack of dawn till it gets dark, you know, and that was tough, not in the sense of the physical part of it, because it's, you know, it's like going to a conference every day in my mind. It's like, all right, this is nothing that I haven't done before. You want me to do it your way, and I'm going to play the game. I was great at playing the game. I'm keeping my mouth shut. You don't know me from Joe Blow. I could have just graduated minimum standards yesterday. Like, that's the attitude and the mind frame that I had was, hey, when I first walked into that firehouse in Plantation, Florida, or Columbia, South Carolina, what do I wish I knew then that I know now? And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be the best probie. I'm going to be the best recruit. I'm going to also help out these dudes that are struggling, trying to figure it out. Like, hey, man, I see myself in you. Yeah, you're not the strongest. You're a buck 50. But, bro, check me out. This is what I did. Hey, at lunch, meet me over behind the drill tower. Let's go mess with some ladders real quick. We're going to get this right. You know, because I want you to stand out. I want them to see your work ethic. I want them to see you be a good dude. And I don't know, I kind of had like a nickname of like, you know, Papa Bear, Father Time, whatever the case may be. But like, bro, I want to help y'all get on. Right. Like, this is the best job in the world. Y'all, like, we made it to step one. They said, yeah, come on. Come try this out. Come to our recruit school, get on. So that wasn't hard for me. The hardest part was being away from my kid, dude. I'm telling you, like, I would leave and he was asleep. And then I'd get home from recruit school.
And he'd be asleep. Yep.
And I'm like, I missed that window, bro. Like, it was like 2 months, you know, where he was like 7 months, 8 months, 9 months old, where I'm like, oh, he's being real active. My wife would be showing me videos from the day. I'm like, getting emotional, like, damn, like, I'm missing this. Am I doing the right things? Like, it'll all pay off in the end. Just keep doing what you're doing. And then, you know, obviously it did. By the grace of God, I was home the day he took his first steps, got it on video, on my phone. So, like, the validations from whatever you want to believe in is just like, yeah, this was the right decision. So recruit school in of itself, yeah, there were some moments where I was, like, taking a beating because, you know, I'm not going to have to do anything. You know, you want us to do this RIT drill. All right, let's go. Like, I got to make sure that they know, yeah, I'm one of the older guys in the class, but, you know, I can work now. You know, I'm going to work until that bell goes off. So, yeah, there were some nights my wife would tell you, if she was sitting right here right now, she'd probably be giving me that funny look because there was nights when she had to put them ice packs on my knees and, you know, put that Neosporin on and stuff like that. I was hurting, but I wasn't going to show it, you know. So, yeah, the recruit school was interesting. It was unique. You know, I was glad I was able to humble myself and go through it again and get that validation and be like, okay, I still got that, you know, not to be funny, but I still got that dog in me, you know, like I can still get after it Monday through Friday, you know, 7 to 7. No questions asked, get up, take all these tests, go on the weekend ride-alongs that we're supposed to do, be a good probie, be a good rookie, and, you know, humble myself. And, yeah, it worked out, man, for sure.
And how important would you say it is for an individual coming into whatever department they're at to try and find, seek out those go-getters, those dogs? Because, you know, it's very, I'm sure it's intimidating for a new person to come in. And, you know, depending on the department size, I think it sucks when you have a motivated firefighter. But if it's the way it is, your department has no other choice and they put you with some slugs. And then, you know, that usually that go-getter turns into that slug. But how important is it that they find those go-getters?
Bro, Iron sharpens iron, right? So, like, you have to try to seek that out, and it shouldn't be hard. You know what I mean? It's those type A personalities at times. Sometimes they're assholes. You know what I mean? But sometimes they're good-hearted dudes. They know when to turn that on and turn it off. The best advice I can give someone, man, is like it's your work ethic. You know, that's what people are gonna see first. You could read all the books, you can know all the UL NIST studies, the GRAB surveys. You can be a wealth of knowledge, but if you're mashing ass at 10 a.m. in the recliner, they're not gonna look your way at all, bro. Because it's funny, man. Again, I'm gonna reference Pablo a lot. He's gonna kill me for this, but we were having a conversation the other day, and he was like, "Bro, you can teach people a lot of things. You could teach them how to force a door. You can teach them how to throw ladders. You could teach them how to search. We can teach people how to do this job, but you can't teach someone how to give a shit.
That's
Like, I
right.
can't teach you how to care, how to have work ethic, how to be the first one at the firehouse, how to be the last one to leave." How to, you know, make the coffee, you know, do the little things, making sure the trash is taken out, all the stuff we do in between calls, suggesting drill ideas, freaking even yesterday, you know, like I said, 15 years on job, who cares, whatever. But I'm like, hey guys, let's mess with the freaking distributor nozzles. Let's mess with the modified cock lock. Like, we don't pull this thing out a lot. Let's make sure it freaking works. You know, let's drill. Let's play. Let's have fun. We're gonna get wet. It's 84 degrees in February. Let's enjoy it. Let's have a good time. It's a little lull. It's a freaking Wednesday. Let's have a good time. You know, like that's how important it is to have a good reputation on this job. Because when I suggested that, everybody was like, "Yeah, let's do it. Absolutely, DJ. Come on, let's boom, boom, boom." And not to, you know, toot my horn or say like I'm some gift to the fire service, but
Right.
I pride myself. And being able to read the room and recognizing that, hey man, all these dudes want to be here for a reason, right? And if they're not going to want to go that extra step, let me give you a little push to go that extra step. So when you want to seek out that senior man for these younger guys, hell, you might be doing them a favor, bro. You might be sparking, being the spark that they needed. So go out there, don't be bashful about it, man. Say, hey man, I want to learn. Hey, you mind teaching me this? Even if you already know 90% of it, they might give you that 10% that you didn't even know. Be able to humble yourself, bro. You know, go out there and just ask for help. Seek out that senior man. Seek out those go-getters, and they're gonna push you to be a freaking dog, bro. That's what I learned, and that's what I try and surround myself with because iron sharpens iron. That's for sure.
I love it. I love it. You can teach. He's right. I mean, you can teach firefighters to do lots of things, you know. I mean, people have taught me growing up, 'cause there's things I didn't know, how to pump a truck, how to force a door, how to do a search, right, like you said, but you can't teach someone to give a shit. Like, you can't. They gotta have it within them. And, you know, alongside with that comes that work ethic. Like for me, you know, my last name's all I got. And you can't please everybody, but I'm pretty confident where I can probably say nobody can say, "Oh yeah, no, he's lazy." Like that don't happen. You may not like me, and that's okay if you don't like me, but you sure as hell can't say that I'm lazy when it comes to the job.
That is a fact, bro. Like you said, all you got is your last name. On the back of that coat, it's got the city on there, the department, whatever. But on the bottom of that thing, that's what you brought with you, and that's what you leave it with too.
Right.
Every time that clock strikes 0800, when you're going out the door, you gotta take that with you, bro. So that I 100% agree with that, man. Like you can say a lot about me. But you ain't gonna say I'm lazy. You're not gonna say I don't care. You're not gonna say that I don't give a crap about the job or I'm not professional. Like I try and carry myself to the standard because I'm not just representing myself. I'm representing my kid, my wife, my parents, my grandparents, you know, God rest my grandmother's soul, you know, the ones that raised me, you know, that's what I'm representing. That's the legacy that you all want to try to leave behind and say, hey, that's a good dude.
Right.
That's a good firefighter.
Right. No, that's facts. Okay. All right. With that, man, in your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Ooh, Man, I know that's the hot button topic right now.
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is, and all that. Dude, I live on Instagram to a fault. My wife tells me to put my freaking phone down all the time. Man, what does aggressive mean to me? Dude, there's that fine line, right, between aggressive and reckless. And I always want to kind of analyze that. I'm like, okay, let me look back at my career, because I like to think that I'm a quote unquote aggressive fireman. But if I took DJ from 2009 and put him in the situations I'm in now and expected him to operate in the same manner, that's reckless. That's 100% reckless, dude. So what aggressive means to me is obviously it's a skill set, right? Our department gives us these SOGs, these guidelines, and say, hey, for structure fire, first do engine, your roles and responsibilities are this. First do truck, second do truck. These are your roles and responsibilities. This is your sandbox. This is what you're operating in. These are your guidelines. Now it's up to us to recognize, okay, this is my toolbox. This is my scenario. This is what they're expecting me to do. They're expecting me to complete a primary search. They're not telling you exactly how to do it. They're not saying, hey, go into this room, do a right hand search. No, it's up to us to figure it out. So it comes back to knowledge, skills, and abilities for me. First and foremost, knowledge. Do you have the knowledge of what you're about to accomplish? Okay, you want me to do a primary search. Well, before I step off the rig, I size up the house. I notice that it is wider than it is deep. Okay, it's one of them ranch style homes, but it's got a carport on the Bravo side. Okay, so that lets me know that that door from the carport probably leads into some sort of laundry room or kitchen area before it gets to the greater room, the living room. So that lets me know, okay, if I want to do a targeted search, what side of the house do I probably need to start on? Probably opposite of that side of the house. So that goes into knowledge, right? I have the knowledge, the previous knowledge. I've studied this. I know the building construction in my district. We got balloon frames, shotguns, and ranches, and all that stuff. So I know the difference of building construction. And then I know how the fire dynamics are typically going to operate or coincide with that building construction, whether they work together or work against each other. I need to know that. So that comes with just the knowledge, being a student of the game. Then it's the skills, okay? Do I have the skills to do this? Have I trained on this before? If we're saying, hey, we're about to go VES, first floor VES, second floor, whatever you want to call it, targeted search. If I'm about to initiate my primary search from other means than the front door, have I trained on that before? Right? Do I have the skills to do that? Can I hustle a 28 to the rear of this three-story apartment, get to the top floor, mask up before I take the window, get up there? Can I mask up on the ladder? Have I tried that before? I'm about to try that for the first time on the fire ground. No. Do I have a skill set to do that? Take the window, dump in, do a quick shot to the door, search the hallway, close the door, isolate. Do I have all that and then be able to recognize, hey, those conditions in the hallway were pretty good. Maybe I can go a little bit further. But that comes back to my knowledge of the building construction. So knowledge and skills coincide. And when I'm searching, am I think we just get so focused, and I apologize for going on the tangent, man, but we just get so focused on the search and not the actual searching. So like, okay, you want me to search, so I'm gonna search. And you'll see it in recruit schools. Hey, I got a couch. Hey, I got a chair. Hey, I got this. Bro, you got a person or not? You know what I mean? If you're searching with me, and back when I was a boss, it was the same way. I was like, bro, tell me what kind of room and let me know if you find somebody. That's all I care about. Hey, I got a bathroom. Bet. That lets me know you're going to be out of there real quick. Bedroom, small, perfect. Bunk bed. The antenna goes up, right? All right, in the hot spot now. That's all I want to hear. We're searching for people, not pennies, bro. So let me know. If you're searching, if you'll see it in the recruit schools, man. You're watching these guys search and they grab a couch cushion and they're feeling it, feeling like, hey man, what are you doing? I'm trying to figure out what this is. Is it a person or not? Chuck it. Keep it going, bro. And you saw it at Duffy's class, man. Let's use live victims.
Right.
Let's try to use live people so you can understand, like, hey, this is what a person feels like. And we gotta get away from that training scar. So knowledge and skills. And lastly is your abilities. So you got the knowledge of the building, right? You got the knowledge of the fire ground and you have the skills, you've trained on this. Now, do you have the physical abilities and the mental ability to actually do that? And is your department providing you with the resources to do it? That's another thing. I'm blessed to work for Jacksonville Fire Rescue, where for a freaking box alarm, just a regular 900,000 square foot home, four engines, two trucks, three chiefs, the squad, two ambos, all on scene within 6 minutes. I'm in a downtown grid, but we're talking like 40 people on scene that quick. So I can get away with doing a lot of aggressive behaviors that I probably couldn't get away with back in Columbia in the 4th Battalion, where I might be on scene by myself for about 12 to 13 minutes before the next arriving water source gets on scene, where I'm only operating on tank water waiting for a tanker shuttle. You see what I'm saying? So that's where the knowledge comes in as well. Like, hey, man, understand you're going to have to kind of move in a different light. You got to either move a little bit faster or you got to figure some things out. Do you have the physical capabilities to do this? Are you in good enough shape? Have you practiced throwing that 28 by yourself? Or is this the day you're about to try and figure it out when someone's hanging out the window? No, you got to train on that, bro. You got to know with your heart of hearts, hey, help me drive this 35, bro. You, come here, help me. You got to own it. So that's what aggressive is to me, having those knowledge, skills, and abilities all wrapped in one, understanding, hey, yes, I have parameters that I operate in on the fire ground. But anytime I want to start moving out or getting what I call extra credit, you got to be able to justify it and back it up with your knowledge, skills, and abilities, bro. And that's aggressive. And if you're losing in one of those things, that's when the domino effect starts. And it's reckless. So that's me, bro. That's just my opinion. Right, wrong.
Love the answer, man. It makes 100% sense to me. 100% sense to me. Okay. All right. With that being said, let me see where I wanted to go with this next one. I'm gonna ask you. So, you were a company officer back in Columbia. Do you have any intent, or I don't want to say intent, but any aspirations to get back to that position at some point in Jacksonville?
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. I'd be lying if I said that I didn't. You know, granted, yes, riding tailboard is the best seat in the firehouse, or one of them. You know what I mean? I'm on a freaking tiller ladder in downtown Jacksonville, bro. It don't get much better than that. You know, I am flying by the seat of my pants every third day. I work with some of the best dudes that, you know, that you can ever imagine. Guys are just into the job, you know, so I love it. But with that being said, you know I would be selling myself short by not at least trying, you know, and understanding that this is a different challenge. So sure, I worked in Columbia. I was able to climb that mountain. I was able to get up to company officer, but then I left that mountain. Now, I wouldn't say that, yes, I'm back at the bottom of the mountain, but it's a different mountain, right? It's a different department.
Right.
But it's not like I haven't climbed the mountain before. Sure, it's a different mountain. There may be some different challenges, but I think I got the knowledge behind it to where I can figure this thing out. It's not that I'm power hungry and want to do that, but I like the challenge. I was able to do it before at what I thought was a pretty decent level. I was able to be a boss on a truck company. So my ultimate goal is to get back to that at a minimum. We got an engineer's test coming up in a couple months now. As soon as this is over, I'm about to jump back into the books. But I plan on, you know, taking that next test, promoting an engineer. And then when I'm eligible for the lieutenant's test, taking that one. And then once I'm eligible for the captain's test, taking that. And we'll see where I'm at as far as age and time and how much I'm loving my assignment, if I want to, you know, take that next step to chief. But Yeah, man, I do plan on working my way back up. More so also for my kid, man.
Right.
I want him to see, like, yeah, your dad wasn't gonna be stagnant. Like, yeah, he could have just came back and started over, because he's gonna hear the story of how we lived in South Carolina and how your dad captain and he decided to start over for us. But I also want him to see, but yeah, that didn't stop him from climbing that mountain again and working his way all the way back up and opening doors if he wants to get back into the fire service whenever he becomes of age, and show him, like, hey man, it's obtainable, it's possible if you just work hard. Anything, whether it's a fire service or not,
Right.
you work hard at it, if you are passionate about it and you put in the effort, it's obtainable regardless of what anyone says or does to you, man. You got to put that stuff in the rear view and make it happen. So yeah, man, long answer to your question, but 100%, bro, I do plan on trying to work my way up. And dude, I'll leave it at this. In my mind, dude, it's freaking Jacksonville, dude. We're one of the largest apartments in the country, right? We're
Right.
like top 15. We're constantly growing every day. We got 70 firehouses, a little over 70 firehouses, 2,000 members. To be able to retire one day and hang my hat and say, yeah, I was a captain in fire department, dude, that's gonna be awesome.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
So I met you in what I would call outside training. We bumped into each other through Pablo, and I was able to take a Duffy's class, and you were there assisting with the instruction. So my question to you is, how important is outside training and getting outside of your department's bubble?
It's invaluable, man. I was that guy that lived in a bubble.
Okay.
When I was in Columbia, man, I was bubble buddy. All right. I was Columbia through and through. I didn't care where you from, what you did. Like, oh, this is how we do it here. You know what I mean? I never really would get out and do that kind of outside training. Yeah, we would do mutual aid drills, but I wasn't going to conferences and things of that nature. It's hard to be a prophet in your own land, so I was like, let me get out, let me explore. And honestly, bro, it was when I got back to Florida, I was like, man, I want more. Like, this is awesome. Let me get out. St. Augustine had a fire conference. I was like, let me go try this one out. It's right up the road. I was able to go down to Fort Lauderdale, be a part of that expo. Again, Carolina, it's invaluable to get out there and do that, because you don't know what you don't know, man. If you live in this bubble, yeah, you see the same buildings, you got the same response packages, you see the same hose loads. But to be able to go try something out of your comfort zone, and again, get comfortable being uncomfortable, it's good to remind yourself again that you still got that dog in you. You're still able to go out there with some of the best of the best, because these dudes are from all over. And usually they're not any slouches. You run into these people outside training, they're paying for it out of pocket. They're traveling. They might even be bringing their wife and kids with them and stuff like that. But it usually the people that you encounter at these conferences are like-minded. They all want to just be better and want the job to just continue to grow and progress. And I love every minute of that. And I try and preach it to I call it the young guys and newer people on the job, or people that haven't gone to a conference yet. I'm like, hey man, try it once. I'll pay for it, dude. I'll spot you half the reservation. I won't say I'll pay for it, but some of these are like $500. But I'll go with half on it, bro. Or I'll go with you. How about that? I'll go with you, man. If you really want to go, let's make it happen. Because we're blessed in Florida, we got conferences up and down all over. Like I said, St. Augustine, South Florida's got it, the Space Coast has got it, the West Coast, Central, Orlando Fire Conference. I mean, and then if you want to go up to Georgia, we got MAFC, Atlanta. Then to go a couple more hours, we in South Carolina, bro. I promise, I'm not even joking. We just had a guy from the other shift just got back last week from the Carolinas. went to the truck academy. He's like, how much money?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, look out for Jacksonville, bro. Like we're traveling all over taking these classes. Guys from the hazmat team, station 7, jam up dudes, they go all over, you know, station 4, station 1. Now we're on the map. People that you wouldn't even know. Like I said, my department's so big, I'm meeting new people every day. I go to work, but these guys are going out getting training. So that culture is infectious. So much so, our department, as big as Jacksonville is, we're bringing outside vendors in to help train us. Hey, man. Yeah, we just had Clyde Gordon, you know, Chief Gordon.
Nice. From Houston.
These huge, big-time speakers just come in, did the Mid-Rise Mayhem class for us. You know, like, yeah, these buildings are popping up. Here's how we can do better. Because we had one just over a year ago, first due on the truck, 7-story, mid-rise, high-rise, whatever you want to call it, fire show on top floor. And it ran the attic, got in them void spaces, man, and it did its thing. You know, and that thing went to over 3 alarms for us. And, you know, like the chief said, he's like, for the first 40 minutes, y'all did outstanding, kicked his butt. But it's that building construction that we really got to recognize, right? Like how they're building these new buildings, how it's designed to combat us, like these weird void spaces. And when we were at this fire, we were still dealing with, it's under construction, open elevator shafts, you know, all kinds of stuff and zero visibility. You know, so us being able to go out and go to another agency and say, hey, you've had success in this. How can we be better as well? Mm-hmm. And I think as a firefighter, being able to see that, okay, my organization is doing that, I can do that too. Hey, you're a good fireman, Danny. How can I be better? Teach me your ways. Where are you going to be next month? Oh, you're going to this conference? Boom, I'll see you there. And I promise you, the friendships you make along the way, the networking, you can be in any state in the country and have a flat tire and have that peace of mind that I think I know someone that lives near you. Put something on Facebook, bro. That brotherhood just shoots out in all kind of directions, man. It is awesome, bro. It's good. It's good stuff, bro.
Love it. Love the answer, man. Okay. Okay. I mean, I try to preach it as much as I can to the younger individuals we're hiring, to even the senior guys, and some guys see it as well. Is the department going to pay for me? If not, well, I don't really want to use my time. And what kind of classes are, I don't want to do that. And to me, it's like, in order to get good at the job, you got to go out there and put the gear on. But there's the, you know, your training doesn't always necessarily have to be, all right, we're going to be packed up, breathing air. Like you can do tool familiarization. You can drive around the district and look at buildings that are being constructed. But one of the things for me is there are times where, yeah, you're going to have to put that gear on because that's what our job calls for when those tones drop. But I kind of equate it back to any sort of sports, man. Like pitchers are always pitching. Quarterbacks are always throwing the ball. Running backs and wide receivers are running routes and doing things. Like, it's the mundane thing that gets us where it becomes second nature.
100%, brother. 100%. So much so. The little things. Checking your air pack off. Do it with gloves on, bro. Like, get that dexterity first thing in the morning. If you're an aerial operator, man, shoot the stick to different objects. Make sure you can get that judgment. Or if you're checking off the pump in the morning, give yourself a scenario in the head. You don't have to charge the lines, but go ahead and run up your PDP to that, what you think that should be for this scenario. Then have someone ask someone else that same question and see if they come up with the same answer or something different. Then verify, like, just it's the mundane things that we can do as soon as we walk in the door, start getting that ball rolling, because then that creates the momentum throughout the day where you got dumb DJ, hey, let's pull out the distributor nozzles because I don't know, they're on the inventory, but we don't never pull them out on fire. So let's see if we can break it. Let's see if it still works. You know what I mean? So I agree 100%, brother. You are preaching, man.
All right. One of the things we talked about while we met, you know, and I asked you, like, hey, if you come on, like, I'd like to have a discussion. And so, you know, I want to discuss this because in this day and age, like, it seems like adults can't have discussions anymore without somebody getting mad or somebody just like
Oh.
shutting down or not listening. You know, like it's okay to disagree and agree, but like it's okay to disagree. You know, everyone's going to have different viewpoints, but at the end of the day, after the discussion, the two parties involved should still be friends. But it seems like in
Yes.
this day and age, if you're not on me, if you're not on the same page with me, then I'm writing you off. And it's like I don't know why we do that. And it's just it's childish in my opinion. But you know,
You're right.
you see like certain departments, especially like for right now. It's February. We're recording this in February, and you know, February is Black History Month. And you know, I saw a department that did a showcase of their African American firefighters, and it's cool. And then, of course, you know, I see there's like 20 something comments, so I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go see what these comments say. And of course, there's always one person in there that's got to be like, I don't understand the reason for this post. You know, firefighters, you know, most people when they call 911 do not care about the individual's race, gender, things like that. And I agree. Like, I've never heard of one person call 911 and be like, yes, I want the first engine to be all white males, particularly blonde, blue eyes. Like, you know, nobody does that. Like, we just want the damn help. So
Facts. Yes.
you know, me, when I was coming into the fire service, there wasn't very many what I would call brown people. Like, I call myself the brown guy. And then or when I'm around others, I tell people I was just baked in the oven a little bit longer than you. All right. So
That's all it is.
that's all it is, really.
That's it. That's it. Some melanin.
That's
That's
right.
it.
That's right. But like, you know, to me, it shouldn't matter. Because like I know coming into this, stepping into this realm, the fire service historically has always been predominantly white. Okay. And there are going to be areas of the country where that's just what it is. What I don't like are organizations and departments that go, okay, well, we want to fix this and we want to have our fire departments represent the area, you know, that we cover. To me, my opinion is no matter if you're black, white, Chinese, Mexican, Latino, Asian, whatever, if that individual truly wants to be a firefighter, they will come to you. Like you don't necessarily have to like go after these individuals. They will come to you. And so with you know, both of us being brown,
Yes.
I want to have that conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. And I'll start by this. I'll say, yeah, I agree with you, man. If people want to be on this job, they'll seek it out. It's always a slippery slope, right? Because I've been in the fire service, let's say 15 years, okay? And this is my third organization. And every time you walk in the door, you just want to be like every rookie, or you
Right.
want to be like everybody else. But you know, we know in our heart of hearts, like there's somebody that might look at you a little differently, right? Whether they have their prejudices or cast judgment, whatever. And I think the onus falls on us to recognize that, hey, you're gonna come across people that just may not like you for who you are, what you stand for, what you look like. That's life in general.
Right.
As an adult, it's like, okay, well, how do you respond to that? Oh, well, that's their hang up. Like you said, I got the name on the back of my coat. That's what I'm representing. I'm not representing my name and yours, brother. Like, I love you to death, but I'm representing my name. As far as, the departments wanting to resemble, their communities that they serve. One, it starts getting to that slippery slope of are we shying away from qualifications and standards and all that other stuff just so we can have these certain people in these certain spots? Now, granted, there are instances where there are people that may get overlooked because of how they look or what they stand for or whatever the case may be. They may get overlooked. Does that happen? I'd be ignorant to say that it doesn't happen. Right,
Right,
it does
right.
happen.
Yeah.
At the same token, I do feel like in some instances it is important to have that representation in the community. But again, I want those that represent my community to also want to be there. I always like to tell this story. Me and my brother reminisce about this all the time. I talk about my brother a lot. He's not even in the fire service, but he was with me through this whole process. We were at my grandmother's house in Cleveland, and we'd be playing outside, doing what boys do in the summer because school's out, parents are at work, and there's no summer camps in the city. So where we at? We at grandma's house outside playing. And here comes Tower Ladder 10 coming down Ashbury Avenue, Cleveland, Ohio. And I look in that truck, bro, and I see four African Americans on that thing. And that instilled a little bit of confidence in me to know, like, okay, yeah, I can do this. It's cool for me to do this. You know, the kids at school make fun of me joking, but look at these strong brothers, man, like they doing it. So yeah, I can do it too. And that wasn't on no DEI, you know, they were there just for the maybe that's how the group chart fell that day, you know, but I saw that and that resonated with me. So even to this day, at my station, though at station one, I think it's myself and one other African American between the three shifts. Okay. And there's over 45 of us between the three shifts. A lot of apparatus at the station. But when we run calls into the east side and the inner city part of, you know, I pride myself in being there because I like to have, be that representation. I can talk to these kids, you know, if they're having a medical complaint or something else is going on, maybe we can have a conversation. They'll feel more comfortable talking to me as they would, you know, counterparts are like, hey man, let me talk to him. Let me talk. Hey bro, what's going on? Right? I can use different kinds of terminology and vernacular that doesn't come off as disrespectful. It comes from a place of, you know, community and culture. So, yes, it's important to have that representation. However, we got to do it the right way, man. Like you said, it's got to be people that want to seek it out. You can't force no one to do anything they don't want to. You can't say, oh, I need this amount of blacks on the job. I need this amount of women. Dude, I want dogs. I don't care what you look like. I just need some dogs. I want to go do dog stuff with me to go save this community and protect it. Now, if you happen to be African American, cool. If you happen to be Caucasian, cool. If you happen to be a woman, cool. Gay, straight, don't matter. You want to do this job? Let's get after it. And like you said, having these conversations at the table, man, it always gets a little awkward. Back down that road of, oh, well, you know, they don't want to be here for the job, or they're just trying to do quotas and all this and that. And it's just, man, I hate it. You know, I'm like you. I'll go through the comments, but oh, cool, man. Such and such fire department posted this Black History thing. That's dope. And I learned a lot. Like, man, I didn't know that they didn't get their first chief until 1997. Damn, that's crazy, right? But look how they have come, right? Let's celebrate that history instead of just trying to say, oh man, we don't care about it, or say, oh, well, why are y'all celebrating Black History Month? How come we don't have this type of history month or whatever? Like, because, man, like, you know why. Like, why are we doing it? Let's just celebrate it. Let's just all be Americans and let's all be brothers in the fire service together and be able to celebrate our history. Because on St. Patty's Day, what we doing? Okay. What am I doing on St. Patty's Day? I'm in my green going out with everybody because it's the fire service. It's Irish, right? We want to go to the parades and do all this stuff. I'm not Irish. I don't think I have Irish in my family. You know what I mean? So I ain't Black Irish. I don't have, you know. But culture, I understand that that's your culture. Yeah, let's celebrate it, dude. Latin Festival happening down the way. I'm on the way. Let's go. Let's celebrate. It's in our district. We going, right? Let's celebrate those cultures. Let's celebrate our differences because that's what makes us American, bro. Like the whole country was founded on our differences, right? The ugly history of it. where it is now, right, wrong, or indifferent, we are always going to disagree. Always. Politics, what y'all want to have for dinner, you know, where does this tool go on the rig? Like, we always going to disagree on something. But at the end of the day, can we at least agree on the fact that, bro, we here for the same reasons. We're both human beings. We love this job. We love this community. And yeah, we may love our heritage as well. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
That's just my opinion on it, bro.
No, I love it. We don't need to go any further. I mean, we both said our piece on it. I hope anyone listening can understand. Like, you know, yes, you're always going to have that bad apple. There's a bad apple in every group. And there's a, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to have some that are going to push it to the limit, some that are going to take it a little bit more seriously than it really needs to be, but it ain't that serious. At the end of the day, at least through my experiences, firefighters don't care what you look like. They just want to make sure that you can have their back when shit hits the fan. Plain and simple. You can do the job and you can have each other's back. That's it.
That's
and
it, bro.
And from time to time with me, I'm going to joke about it. You know, like, here lately, I've been driving the apparatus a lot. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, someone would be like, oh, look, this lady's looking at you. And I'll throw the thing. Well, she probably thinks I stole the motherfucker, you know, but that's just, that's just how I do it to get my crew to be like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like, yeah, he threw that joke. Yeah. Like, we don't have to be serious all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's my day to drive. I guess I'm driving Miss Daisy today. Let's go, fellas. You know what I mean? Like, you got to make light of it, brother. Let's joke about it, man. We are brothers. We got to be able to talk about this and laugh about it and be able to take a joke.
Exactly.
Like, don't be all sensitive, bro. If you're going to give it out, you got to be able to take it to part. You know what I mean? So
yeah. That's
just my opinion on it, brother. And hey, that's why I enjoy my firehouse and my shift, because we do have that relationship. We can joke about it. You know, we can sit down and watch the Super Bowl and watch that Kendrick Lamar halftime show. And I don't get it. And I'd be like, that's okay. You don't have to. They're not like, and I'm back here dancing. You know what I mean? You know, like, well, no, we can go into detail. We can talk about the beef and Drake and all this other stuff. But if you don't get it, that's cool. You ain't got to get it. I get it. I'm loving it. You know
right. What
I mean? And
right.
It's just like, and we family. You know,
right.
I'm the crazy uncle at the cookout. You know, and then other days when, you know, the country music festival, they got all that on TV. They had a crazy uncle at the cookout. I'm like, hey, I don't get it. I don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
But like, that's their culture.
Right.
And family, you know, you ain't got to agree on everything, but yeah, we're going to love each other. And that's what we do, bro. We're going to love each other.
That's right.
The fire service, bro. That's how it should be.
That's right. That's right. Man, I had a memory pop up. I remember an old captain of mine, he's retired now, but, you know, awesome dude, showed me a lot, taught me a lot. You know, I would always get movies and I'd be like, hey, Cap, movie night tonight. He's like, all right, what are we watching? I'm like, it's a little movie called Django. That was so uncomfortable the entire time. He's like, I don't know if we can watch this movie while we're at work right now. He's like, what do you got me watching? I'm like, come on, Cap, let's watch it. He watched it all, but at the end, he was like, I didn't know about that movie. I don't know what to say. I'm going to my room. And I'm like, oh,
God. You can see the sweat stains on the recliner.
Especially when it came to the mask scene, when they put the hoods on. And the guy was like, I can't see fucking shit in this thing.
All that matters in the horse scene. Oh, my God.
Oh, but...
Yeah, that's family right there, bro.
Oh, for yeah, sure. For sure, for sure. Last question I always like to ask the guests. Where would you like to see yourself before you hang it all up?
Ooh, where would I like to see myself before I hang it all up? Man, I don't even think I've ever asked myself that question.
Okay.
You know, like, have, you know, broad ideas of like, yeah, you know, I want to promote, I want to do this, I want to do that, but like, what is a goal of mine? What do I want to see? I just want to be able to walk out the door and at least know that people would say that I was able to do a good job the time I was there. Whether I promote all the way up or not, they just know that, you know what, man, DJ was a good dude. You know, even after he retired. Damn, he comes by the firehouse a lot, but he was a good dude. So he didn't me coming by for breakfast every once in a while. You know what I mean?
Right.
Before I hang it all up, I just want to know that, have that validation within my heart that over the 30 years or however long I decide to do this job, I try to do it the right way every day. And if I can have that in my heart of hearts, no promotion, no assignment to a tiller or squad or whatever, just knowing that, hey, every third day I got up and left my family, I did the job the right way, and I was able to come back home and be a good husband and be a good dad to the best of my abilities. That's what I try and do every day, and that's what I'm going to try to keep doing until that final day on the job where I hang it all up, man. So that, I know that's probably not the answer you're looking for.
No, dude, there's no right or wrong. It's up to the guests, and I had no complaints. I love it. I love it. Like I said, there's no right or wrong to this.
Yeah, man, it's I like, appreciate it.
Because, you know, I believe everybody should hopefully have aspirations. And whether that's, hey, I just want to be a tailboard fireman, but the best tailboard fireman for the next 20 years, whatever the case may be. I just always like to ask the guests because I hope that everyone has a goal in mind at the end of their career.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's my goal, man. Just to do this job at a high level to the best of my abilities and doing it the right way. And hopefully making a positive impact and leaving a positive impact on the department one way or another. So
that's it, man. One more little question. Your son, if he at some point came up to you and was like, Dad, I want to be fireman, would that I'm assuming you're going to be cool if he wants to or not, but like, how special would that be if he's like, Dad, I want to ride the trucks?
Oh, man. Yeah, it's special now because he loves fire trucks. You know what I mean? Like any kid does. Like, I see myself in him. Obviously, he's my son, but he loves fire trucks. He's enamored with it, to the fact that he'll be four next week, and on the 24th, actually, he'll be four. And he knows the difference between an engine, truck, squad, heavy rescue, ambulance, you know, their roles and responsibilities. Like, and he's into it. It's not that I'm forcing him on it, but if he has, Dad, I'll tell you what it is.
Right.
What does that truck do? What does this truck do? Dad, which truck are you on? Why do you like that truck? You know, and if he gets to the point in his career where he's not a neuro brain surgeon or whatever, and he decides he wants to be a fireman, absolutely. I think the job will be in a good place. You know, we are doing so much right now. We're doing more than when we did when I first started. And I'm sure you could say the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we want with this profession, as far as mental health, as far as cancer prevention. You know, we're not just sweeping these things under the rugs. We're actually kind of looking at it and trying to say, hey, man, is there anything we can do to where we can still do our jobs the way that we need to at a high level? But hey, can we also protect our guys too? Is that something we can do? Because we work 25, 30 years and then we don't get to enjoy our retirement.
Right.
Or unfortunately, you know, guys will take a lot of stuff home with them and then they don't make it back the next shift. And we got to try and find a way to fix that stuff, man. And, you know, there was just seeing the number of suicide rates, like, that kills me. You know, I hate it. I hate to see that because we lose so many people to that than we do in the line of duty.
Right.
But we're doing something about it now. Like, there is, you know, next rung. Mm-hmm. There are these programs where you can reach out if you need help, cancer research, things of that nature. Like, we are doing what we can to understand, like, all right, you need these exhaust systems in the bay. Hey, PFAS, that term PFAS, we're hearing about all that now. Hey, wear your mask and overhaul, you know.
Facts.
Stuff like that. And that's me, the pot calling the kettle black. You know what I mean? Like, I was terrible at it. You know, I would be cheating, man. You know, unclipping, trying, because you didn't want to be the first guy to have his bell go off. So, like, how can I save air? Let me go find a window real quick and take a blow. You know, like, that's stupid, bro. Like, what are you doing? So I think the job will be in a much better place. It can always be aggressive. the job will always continue to be aggressive. We will have that aggressive culture. And I think that if he said he wanted to be a fireman, I'd be all right with it, because I know that he would have that same kind of work ethic that I did. And he would, you know, try and shine towards those dogs and allow them to kind of mold him. I would be very hands off. If he had questions, I'd give him answers, but he's going to have to figure it out for himself. And I think that's the best way to do it, especially, you know, you're a young guy coming in. You don't want to just ride on the coattails of your old man. You got to create it yourself. So absolutely. Absolutely.
Love it, man. DJ, man, I've appreciated, I have thoroughly enjoyed and appreciated this episode, man. I know it took some rearranging between me getting sick and then you finally getting, and you getting sick. And, but we made it work, and I have thoroughly have enjoyed this conversation. I can't express how I love how our paths aligned. And I think the only reason why it wouldn't have happened if I didn't go to outside training. So I want others to know, maybe think about that person that you might not bump into that you just mesh with and have really good conversations with. So, like I said, thank you for doing this.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me. And like you said, the way our paths just aligned and crossed, dude, you can't write stories like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's super dope, man. And just how much, just those brief interactions we're able to have that weekend, bro. And just seeing how we were able to pick up like we hadn't even left.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, this has been awesome. And that's what the conferences and outside training is all about, bro. It's about building those relationships and being better. You know, I saw you the way you were operating that weekend. I was like, damn, I got to step my game up. Like, there's some dogs out here, man. If I say something wrong, they will call me out on it as well they should. You know, I'm out here trying to represent Sean and, you know, do everything the right way and Mr. Anderson and all that stuff. But it was awesome, man. And like you said, if you are having second thoughts about going to outside training, man, just do it. Yeah. I don't know how many times we got to preach it, bro. Do it, do it, do it. You'll be happy that you did.
Definitely. Definitely. Like I said, man, I appreciate this episode. Hopefully others have enjoyed the message, the nuggets, the gems that you dropped along the way. That's the most important part.
Man, I appreciate you for having me, bro. I hope we can do this again soon, man. Let's link up, bro. I'm going to try and get up that way soon. So we'll have to make it happen.
Definitely. Definitely. All right.
All right, man.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.